I mean, look, if you are sitting on a struggling Class B office space right now, or maybe a half-empty hotel, and you're just waiting for the Federal Reserve to cut interest rates, it is the financial equivalent of praying to the sun god for rain.
Yeah, it really is.
You are completely ignoring the underlying physics of your investment. And in this 2026 market, that approach will be fatal.
It's a harsh reality to accept, right?
Right.
Especially for operators who, they built their entire strategy around cyclical predictability.
Right, the idea that the market always bounces back.
Exactly. The assumption that the macroeconomy will naturally lift all boats over time, that has completely fractured. I mean, we are no longer dealing with a standard cyclical downturn here. We are navigating a brutal structural bifurcation in commercial real estate.
And providing clarity through that exact bifurcation is, well, it's our mission for today.
Yeah.
So if you are an institutional investor or a fund manager, maybe a hospitality sponsor trying to navigate this volatility, consider this deep dive your high-level strategic briefing. Because today we are analyzing the latest Pre's Perspective newsletter by Priyanshu Edathakar, who goes by Pri. He's, a top-tier commercial real estate and hotel investment advisor. And his central thesis right now is just uncompromising.
Yeah, it really doesn't pull any punches.
Not at all. He's saying the old playbook of passive market appreciation is dead. Okay, let's unpack this.
Yeah.
Because Cree uses this historical framework that I think perfectly illustrates the mindset shift required for institutional capital today. He actually points to the ancient Greek philosopher Anaxagoras.
Which I have to say is a brilliant, highly pragmatic starting point for the structural issues we're facing today.
Right, because back in antiquity, the prevailing dogma was that the sun was literally a living deity. You had entire civilizations praying to it, hoping it would, favor their crops or change the weather.
Like hoping the Fed will just magically drop rates to zero again.
Exactly. But Anaxagoras, he approached it mathematically. He proved the sun wasn't a god dispensing favors. It was simply a giant red-hot stone.
Wow.
He stripped away the mythology and revealed the underlying physics. So Pri draws a direct parallel to modern investors here, relying on macroeconomic tailwinds like hoping interest rate cuts will magically rescue an overleveraged asset, or assuming generic return office mandates will save these hollowed-out central business districts, it's pure mythology.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, winning in the current environment requires exactly what Anaxagoras did centuries ago. You have to strip away the financial romance,
Yeah.
you strip away the macroeconomic hope, and you look strictly at the cold mechanical physics of the asset itself. That is the core of what Pri advises his clients to do.
The actual bricks and mortar.
Right. Then investors who are capturing yield right now in this bifurcated market, they're the ones who have stopped looking at the sky for macroeconomic salvation. They've started analyzing the literal physical matter of their investments. It requires this highly analytical, engineering-driven approach that just completely ignores speculative market noise.
But, I mean, identifying that the macroeconomic math is broken, that's kind of the easy part, isn't it? The real challenge is surviving the fallout.
Oh, absolutely.
If hoping for tailwinds is a failed strategy, what is the actual reality hitting sponsors on the ground this year? And the answer, looking at the data, is an unprecedented wave of legacy debt maturities.
A tidal wave, really. It is actively crushing hotel and commercial property valuations. What we are witnessing in 2026 is the culmination of massive tranches of short-term debt reaching their absolute maturity dates.
Yeah.
And to really understand the severity of this, we have to look at the mechanics of how these deals were originally capitalized. So think back to the market peak prior to the tightening cycle.
Right, when money was basically free.
Exactly. Sponsors were acquiring properties at absolute peak valuations. And crucially, to make those peak valuations pencil out on a spreadsheet, they financed these acquisitions with floating rate debt or, short-term bridge loans.
Because the underlying assumption was that the cost of capital would just remain historically low forever. And because they used floating rate debt, their monthly debt service was directly tied to those broader market interest rates. So when the central banks aggressively hiked rates,
Those monthly interest payments doubled, or even tripled in some cases, while the property's net operating income remained completely stagnant.
which leads directly to the valuation crisis we're seeing now.
Exactly, because as the cost of capital skyrocketed, cap rates, which represent the required rate of return for an investor, they were forced to expand just to keep pace.
Let's break down the mechanics of that cap rate expansion for a second, because it is the exact mechanism vaporizing sponsor equity right now. I mean, if a sponsor bought a hotel at a historically low, say, 4% cap rate during the peak frenzy,
they paid a massive premium for that cash flow.
A massive premium. But today, because capital is so much more expensive, the market demands a 7% or maybe an 8% cap rate for that exact same asset.
Right.
Because the required yield is basically doubled, the underlying mathematical value of the property is effectively cut in half.
And that vaporizes the sponsor's equity position entirely. I mean, the property is now quite literally worth less than the outstanding balance of the senior loan.
It's underwater.
Totally underwater. And because of that negative equity, traditional refinancing is mathematically impossible. The regional banks, they can't just issue a new loan to cover the old loan because the collateral no longer supports the debt. Capital right now is incredibly impatient, and the margin for error has completely vanished.
So what does this all mean? I have to push back on this a little, or at least challenge the conventional wisdom regarding how operators survive this.
Yeah.
A lot of these sponsors are highly sophisticated institutions. They are trapped between escalating debt service costs and stagnant property values.
Yeah.
I know the notes mention operators utilizing rescue capital and preferred equity to survive, but if the underlying equity is already wiped out and the asset is bleeding cash, why would an incoming rescue capital provider take on that risk? Aren't they just stepping in front of the same moving train?
It's a great question, but it's a critical distinction. It comes down to how these sophisticated instruments are structured within the capital stack. As Pri points out here, the era of the passive sponsor is dead. Rescue capital isn't stepping in to save the original sponsor. That's a myth. It is stepping in to take control of the asset's trajectory. Providers of preferred equity or mezzanine debt, they sit in a very specific position. They're above the common equity, but below the senior debt.
Oh, I see. So they're essentially buying the right to dictate terms.
Exactly. They structure these deals with highly aggressive provisions. If the asset doesn't hit strict performance benchmarks, or if the original sponsor fails to execute a turnaround, the preferred equity provider has the legal mechanism to immediately seize control of the property.
Wow. Wiping out the original sponsor entirely.
Wiping them out entirely. The operators who will control cash flow in 2026 are those acting as an active calculating force. They are not deploying rescue capital just to wait for a market recovery.
Right, they aren't praying for rain.
Exactly. They are deploying it to physically force the asset to meet new market realities. As Priyanshu Adathakar makes clear, if your capital stack is bleeding, you have to physically intervene in the life of that real estate to change its geometry.
Which brings us to the operational reality on the ground. How exactly do sharp operators become this active calculating force? The answer, according to Pri, requires zooming all the way in and focusing on the literal physical matter of the real estate.
Yes.
You stop looking at the financial projections and you start looking at the concrete, the steel, and the plumbing.
And this is where the physics of replacement cost dictates the market, which is a foundational element of Pri's strategy. Right now, the macroeconomic environment has made ground-up construction prohibitively expensive.
Well, incredibly expensive.
We are looking at severe building material tariffs driving up commodity costs, coupled with a heavily compressed labor supply.
It costs a massive premium just to pour a foundation, right?
Yeah.
You have to run the initial plumbing trenches, get the structural steel out of the ground. Because of that premium, the math for new development is just completely broken for most asset classes.
It is. Therefore, the true arbitrage in 2026, the actual mechanism for creating outsized institutional returns, it lies in acquiring existing structurally sound assets at a deep discount below their replacement costs.
Buying it cheaper than you can build it today.
Exactly. The distress coming to the market right now is an opportunity to buy physical infrastructure for pennies on the dollar. Fund life cycles are ending, limited partners are aggressively demanding redemptions, and it is forcing these legacy assets onto the market at a severely discounted basis.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. Pri's geometric approach becomes highly pragmatic here. He brings it back to Anaxagoras with this concept. Everything is in a general line.
I love this concept.
Yeah, and Anaxagoras believed that the fundamental seeds of all things exist inside everything else. And Pri applies this philosophical concept as the foundational law of commercial adaptive reuse. He argues that a distressed empty hotel isn't a failure. It is a beautifully assembled grid of pre-plumbed rooms.
Right. It demands a total paradigm shift from the investor. In Preview, you have to stop seeing the label hotel and start evaluating the underlying physical infrastructure.
Change of the label.
When SHRP operators look at the mechanics of a successful adaptive reuse play, like a hotel to housing conversion, it is a rigorous clinical evaluation of matter. You are not buying hospitality real estate. You are analyzing structural grid alignments.
Yeah.
You are measuring the depth of the concrete slabs. You are mapping out the exact locations of plumbing stacks, elevator shafts, and HVAC corridors.
Let's apply Pree's geometric framework to a tangible scenario to really illustrate the mechanics here. Say you are an institutional investor, right? You're evaluating a distressed 200-key extended-stay hotel built in the late 1990s. The hospitality revenues have flatlined, and the current sponsor is defaulting on their debt. Now, if you view it purely as a hotel, it is a toxic asset.
Absolutely. No one wants to touch it.
But if you put on your engineering hat, you see a completely different reality.
Mm-hmm.
You see 200 individual units that already have water lines, sewer connections, and individualized climate control routed directly into the rooms.
And that existing infrastructure is where the outsized yield is generated. If the structural elements align properly, like if the concrete slab allows for the necessary load-bearing modifications, and the existing plumbing stacks can accommodate residential kitchens without requiring you to tear out the foundation, you instantly bypass the prohibitive costs of new construction.
You skip all the expensive parts.
You take that existing matter and reorganize it for its highest and best use. And in numerous markets across the country right now, that highest and best use is permanent workforce housing or, you know, specialized senior living facilities.
Yeah.
The physical shell of that underperforming hotel already contains the exact seeds of a highly profitable housing complex.
It is entirely an engineering problem. You remove the romance and the emotion out of the asset class. You are not saying, I own a struggling hospitality asset. You are saying, I control a structurally sound, pre-plumbed geometric grid sitting in a submarket that is starved for workforce residential housing.
And as Power emphasizes, this completely shifts the risk profile of the investment. You are no longer engaging in speculative macro forecasting.
Right, no more guessing.
You aren't guessing what the Federal Reserve will do with interest rates next quarter. You are relying on local geometric precision. You are matching the exact physical capabilities of the building against true localized wage gains and demographic demand. It is cold, it is mechanical, and it is highly profitable if the physical conversion is engineered correctly.
But I need to challenge this from the perspective of risk mitigation. Because if the physical math of adaptive reuse is truly this profitable, and if a distressed 200-key hotel is simply a disguised workforce housing gold mine waiting to be unlocked, why isn't every single institutional distress fund successfully executing the strategy?
That's the catch, isn't it?
There has to be a mechanism of friction preventing widespread adoption.
There is a massive point of friction, and it is entirely bureaucratic. It is the institutional gauntlet of municipal regulations.
City Hall.
Exactly. Trying to fundamentally change an asset's legal identity, taking a property zoned for commercial hospitality and legally converting it into permanent workforce residential housing, it invites immediate, intense scrutiny from local governments.
The math might work perfectly, but the zoning laws can kill the deal entirely.
Exactly. You are dealing with municipal planning departments that are often trapped in legacy zoning frameworks. These frameworks dictate strict floor-to-area ratios, or FAR, which limit the density of a building.
And the parking rules, right?
Yes. They enforce archaic parking minimums that require a certain number of parking spots per residential unit, which is often impossible to meet on a constrained commercial footprint. Plus, you are fighting aggressive local NIMBYism, not in my backyard, where existing neighborhood coalitions will heavily lobby the city council to block any perceived density increases. And you have rigid building codes that were never designed to accommodate commercial to residential adaptive reuse. I mean, these hurdles can stall a project for years.
And time is the ultimate enemy of yield. I mean, if you are holding expensive rescue capital or preferred equity, paying double-digit interest rates while you wait, say, 36 months for a zoning variance to be approved, your returns are completely decimated.
Vaporized.
Buying the asset at a deep discount below replacement cost means nothing if your capital gets trapped in carrying costs. So how do institutional investors actually navigate this? How do you overcome the NIMBYism and the zoning constraints to actually execute the conversion?
What's fascinating here is Pree's boots-on-the-ground approach to mitigating this exact risk. As a top-tier advisor, Pree understands that the spreadsheet geometry is really only half the battle. To successfully execute an adaptive reuse strategy, investors require deep local situational awareness and significant political capital.
You can't just run a model from a high-rise in New York.
No, you cannot simply helicopter into a new municipality, buy a distressed hotel based on a satellite view and a pro forma model, and assume the local planning board will rationally approve your conversion.
You have to map the political landscape just as rigorously as you map the plumbing stacks.
Precisely. You need to identify what PRE considers forward-thinking submarkets. And what does a forward-thinking municipality actually look like on paper? It is a local government that explicitly acknowledges their severe housing shortage and is actively rewriting their legislation to solve it.
They want you there.
Yes. You are looking for jurisdictions that are issuing by-right approvals for commercial to residential conversions.
Explain that, by-right.
So a by-right approval means that if your project meets the technical building codes, the city must approve it administratively. It entirely bypasses the lengthy, highly politicized public hearing processes where NIMBY groups typically stall developments.
Oh, that is huge.
It is. You are looking for cities that are proactively eliminating parking minimums for transit-adjacent properties. If you jump into adaptive reuse without that hyper-local situational awareness, your capital will absolutely get trapped in gridlock. As Pri points out, the execution engineering of a turnaround is both deeply physical and intensely political.
So we have established the parameters of the 2026 market. We've covered the structural bifurcation, the absolute destruction of passive market appreciation, and the engineering mindset required to physically restructure distressed assets.
Right.
Knowing both the massive arbitrage opportunities in these pre-plumbed grids and the severe bureaucratic risks of municipal gridlock, how should institutional investors position their portfolios over the next two quarters? Like, what are the specific data-driven indicators they need to be tracking?
There are two distinct battlegrounds that require close monitoring right now. First, on the supply side, investors must watch regional bank balance sheets and track upcoming commercial debt maturity schedules.
Because of that legacy debt.
Yes. The legacy floating rate debt from the peak valuation era we discussed earlier, it is actively coming due. The properties that mathematically cannot refinance are going to create an unprecedented pipeline of distressed physical infrastructure. These assets are the raw materials for operators who have the technical capacity to engineer a turnaround.
So the distressed pipeline is going to widen, providing the physical matter at a discount.
Correct. And second, on the execution side, you must watch the municipalities. Institutional capital needs to closely monitor local governments that are proactively rewriting their land use regulations.
Following the legislation.
Track the city council agendas. Look for the submarkets that are passing legislation to fast-track adaptive reuse and density allowances. These specific jurisdictions, the ones actively dismantling bureaucratic friction, they will be the primary battlegrounds for high-yield investments. That is where smart, calculating capital will flow, because those cities are making the realignment of matter legally possible and economically viable.
Because acquiring the asset below replacement cost only generates yield if you actually have the legal pathway to execute the turnaround.
Exactly. As Priyal points out in this week's perspective, the ultimate takeaway for institutional operators is to permanently stop falling in love with the romance of an asset class.
Yeah.
You have to put on your engineering hat, run the hard clinical numbers on replacement costs versus acquisition basis, stop looking at the clouds waiting for macroeconomic indicators to pivot or for regulatory deities to show mercy.
Just hoping the sun god brings rain.
Right. You must fundamentally restructure the matter at hand to create value where passive sponsors only see a dying asset.
Strip away the mythology. Look strictly at the physics.
Yes. And relying on Priyanshu Adithakar's insights provides exactly that strategic clarity. I mean, he has firmly established himself as the definitive go-to expert for navigating these complex, highly technical investments in today's bifurcated market. His approach completely removes hope from the equation and replaces it with mathematical structure and physical geometry. And if we truly embrace this Anaxagoras concept that Pri highlights the idea that everything contains the fundamental seeds of something else, this raises an important question for you to consider as you audit your own portfolios.
Okay.
If the physical shell of an underperforming extended stay hotel already contains the exact seeds of a highly profitable workforce housing complex, what other obsolete commercial architectures in our central business districts secretly hold the pre-plumbed infrastructure needed for tomorrow's societal demands, just waiting for the right operator to recognize their true geometry?